much. You're very welcome back to The Late Debate. We're debating rights for the Roma and traveller people tonight. Yesterday it was International Traveller and Roma Day, and tomorrow in Dublin a major conference will take place to debate whether the authorities here are preventing or encouraging Roma people to become and feel part of this state. With me tonight are Ronnie Fay, founder and co-director of Pavey Point Traveller and Roma Centre, the organisers of tomorrow's conference, Bridget Quilligan, director of the Irish Traveller Movement, Gabby Muntian, originally from Romania, and she has lived here for 14 years. Michael Keating works as a Roma translator, and David Joyce is a barrister and the acting chairman of the Irish Human Rights Commission. You're all very welcome. We did ask for a representative from the governing parties to take part in tonight's programme, but no one was available. It's nearly 6 months now since a seven-year-old Roma girl was taken from her family home in Dublin by the Gardaí. They took her after a member of the public complained that because she had blonde hair and blue eyes, she didn't look like her parents or her siblings. The Gardaí checked her birth cert and with the hospital where her parents said she was born, but they weren't happy with the answers. So they used Section 12 of the Child Care Act, which gives them powers to remove a child from their home if they believe that child is at immediate and serious risk. Well, DNA tests were carried out and the results proved that she was their daughter. This was their solicitor, Waheed Muda, speaking immediately after the results were made public.
Our clients are absolutely delighted that their daughter is coming home. Her removal has been a cause of huge upset to her parents, her brothers and sisters, and the young girl herself. They do not accept that this was any proper or sufficient basis to take their daughter away from them, thereby causing her and them the upset which has been caused. They are very conscious of the fact that this case has been linked with events in other countries which have nothing to do with them, and that there has been a vast amount of publicity about their situation. They are also conscious of the fact that it is going to be difficult to try to return to normal life. Finally, our clients would like those who hear this statement, and particularly those who are parents themselves, to consider how they will feel if one of your children was taken away in similar circumstances for similar reasons. They hope that no other family has to go through the experience that they have just suffered.
And at the same time, last October in Athlone, a little Roma boy was taken from his home. His father told Kieran Maluli what the Garda officer had said to him.
He not tell me straight away what happened, you know. He tell me, can you come to Garda for a few seconds? I said, yes. And he tell me, can you bring your baby as well? I say, yes, why not? And then he say, I have to take your blood, everything test, and I have to take the kit.
Did he say anything about the color of your child's hair?
Yeah, he says blonde hair, blue eyes, like this. And I say, yeah, it's my wife's grandfather is the same thing. And he tell me, I know that, but the people cannot believe it.
I was the father of a little Roma boy in Athlone who was taken from his home last October and then returned after DNA tests as well. Michael Keating, Michael, you have described these particular cases last October as a game changer. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think that so many incidents of blatant racism have gone unnoticed, but this was so in the public eye, and I think it was very difficult and hasn't been since to properly justify these actions. I mean, we're still awaiting the reports. It's been a while now. But I think it was so blatant and so, on the face of it, inexcusable.
Well, that's the point, I suppose, on the face of it. Without those reports, we're still talking, we're still speculating, really, as to what went on. But are you pretty much convinced it was sheer discrimination?
I can't see how you could dress it up any other way. I mean, obviously, we shall have to wait for these reports. But it seems to have stemmed from the hysteria that started off in Greece with ostensibly a similar sort of a case where a child, simply because her hair colour and her eye colour were different from her parents. And it seemed that people didn't accept that a Roma child could have these characteristics, she was just taken away. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
David, what did you think at the time?
No, again, I agree completely with Michael. I don't think there's any other words you can use to describe it as anything else except discrimination. And unfortunately, a prejudice on the part of authorities, you know, based on a very historical sort of prejudice that exists towards, I suppose, the traveller, the thinker, you know, the gypsy, you know, whatever. They sort of, it's almost fairy tale like prejudice that exists, you know, that the gypsies in the wood take the children away. And I made a comment at the time, and I remember thinking, I was wondering where the Gardaí were actually learning or getting their training in respect of interculturalism, and were they reading fairy tales like this, you know, that made them react in the way. I mean, Michael has mentioned that it stemmed like from media hysteria that came out of Greece in some sense. But that hysteria was based on the notion and based on the belief, the real belief, that gypsies steal babies. Such absurdity. You know, that it's just unbelievable to accept that. And I was ashamed, actually, as an Irish man, an Irish person, I was ashamed of our police force that they engaged in that type of policing. And that in the engaging in that prejudice without any real analysis of what was going on. The evidence was staring them in the face, and would be appeared that was staring them in the face. These people were being produced with birth certs. They were given, and as I said, you know, if somebody turned up in the morning and questioned me about my child, I could prove no more than give them their birth cert. And that's exactly what these families did. And yes, they were, you know, they were taken away. I mean, again, I mean, reference has been made to the reports that have come out. I mean, I know, for example, that the Ombudsman for Children's report is now with the minister. Mm-hmm. And I would certainly hope that, and I know that the minister at the time when he announced the investigation by the Ombudsman for Children, that report would be published and would become public. And I would hope that the minister follows through on that statement, and that the report does become public very, very soon. Because I still think there are serious questions that arose out of those two cases, and it creates serious concern for Roma communities in Ireland, and I still, those concerns are still there.
Absolutely, and I'll talk to you, Gabby, in a second, but I just want to put forward what the Gardaí said a number of months ago when they produced their report into this. It's being studied by Alan Shatter as well, and he has forwarded it to Emily Logan, the Children's Ombudsman. The Gardaí essentially believed that there was a risk that the girl at the centre of this case could have been removed from the country if they didn't take her into care while her identity was being confirmed. The Garda report detailed contacts with HSE social workers from the outset, that they began their inquiries after concerns from a member of the public. They had been involved with this particular family on unrelated matters, as had the HSE. And when the officer and two other Garda called to the house, the mother showed the birth cert for the other children, but they couldn't find the documents for this particular 7-year-old girl. And the Garda spokesman said the officer leading the case said the only consideration of ethnicity was his knowledge of other Roma and, in inverted commas, new community families in similar cases. So that's what the Garda, at least in their report, have said to date. Ronnie Fay, you wanted in there.
Yeah, well, I suppose what struck me in terms of that case was it shows the whole fragmented approach of the state in terms of dealing with both travellers and the Roma community in Ireland. And I was also struck by the speed at which they could intervene when they thought, you know, there was a blonde-haired, blue-eyed child at risk. And it's very striking of the state neglect of the many other thousands of Roma children who are forced to live in poverty here because of the social welfare restrictions, which Gabby can give you more information on. And I think it showed the total disjointed approach of the state, because the police did seemingly talk to the HSE, but it was HSE agency staff rather than actually the HSE staff there who actually knew the family very well and could have confirmed, you know, straight away that the child belonged to the parents. So I suppose what that brings up for us is the wider issue, which is in terms of the lack of coordinated response and the lack of policy implementation, both in terms of travellers and the Roma community, and the opportunity that was afforded to the state through the development of the National Traveller Roma Integration Strategies to actually bring a coordinated and a meaningful approach to the work. And the state has absolutely failed to do that.
And we'll talk more about that strategy later in the programme. But Gabby, you came to Ireland from Romania about 14 years ago. This particular case in Tala and the Midlands, what impact did it have on Roma people living in Ireland?
It was, and it is still, a huge impact. The trust is lost in the guards and all other services, because lots of Roma people, before that, they were willing to speak about the situation and the story and how hard they live in Ireland and all this. But now everybody's hiding. No one wants to go and to speak with the authorities, even if they have some problems. They have problems with the landlords. They have problems with their health issues. They have no medical cards. So everybody stay as it is. They are afraid to ask for something. So the trust is gone.
So you're now afraid of the state?
Yes.
And that fear, is it that they will take your child?
Yes, they would take the child. And it's not, it's proved that even in Europe, all over Europe, Roma children are very easy taken away. And they are very quick taken away without looking for another option. They just take the children. Once it's Roma, they take the children away. And then they leave the families. And it's another thing here. Social workers, sometimes they don't know how to work with families. They don't know where are the Roma. They left. We had the case where they leave the mother living rough on the street and they took the child of her.
And in that instance, what should they do?
They should help the mother. They should help the mother to care of her child, not to take the child from the mother and leave the mother just like that on the street.
So
and she was staying with us in Pavie Point for 2 days.
Mm-hmm. I think it's they need to differentiate between the child protection concerns, which clearly, you know, vulnerable children have to be protected by the state and we'd all support that. But it's dealing with the child welfare concerns. So children are taken into care. Traveller children in Ireland have been 12 times the rate of the majority population. And likewise, at a European level, a study by the European Roma Rights Centre would show similar evidence. So the state is quick to intervene in terms of, you know, the criminalising or putting people into care rather than actually supporting people to live in their extended families and in their communities by providing basic human rights like the right to shelter, the right to food, the right to an education. And I suppose we'd say that, look, you know, the inaction of the state in a positive, progressive, meaningful way means that it actually costs the state more to actually, you know, put people into care. And it's so silly, you know, and inequality isn't good for anybody in society, you know.
Bridget Quilligan, you're director of the Irish Traveller Movement. In relation, just staying with these cases from last October again, is it your view that there was racial profiling going on?
Absolutely there was. There's no doubt in my mind or any traveller or Roma person's mind in Ireland that there was. We know we have our own experience of the Gardaí and of different authorities in Ireland, and would be very much, I suppose, similar to what the Roma people have experienced across Europe and in Ireland now, unfortunately, too, of just as Ronnie spoke about and as Gabby alluded to, having absolutely no trust or confidence in the authorities to deal with child protection issues or to look at our issues in a culturally sensitive matter. So, for instance, those children, when they were taken, I understand what the Gardaí have said and the HSE have said, but they were taken without any proper investigation, talking to the proper people. They were taken on basis of a phone call to the Gardaí by somebody who was clearly racist. They were the tip-off was given not to the Gardaí, but to somebody running a TV programme, a very racist, in my opinion, TV programme about travellers. So the whole process around it, if it was done in any other country, we'd have to look at it. But somehow in Ireland, this becomes acceptable and people are putting out explanations that this was a child protection issue. If it was, why weren't the other children taken, regardless of having birth certs? If there was a child protection issue for one child, why leave the other children then vulnerable? Why take the only blonde child? If you came to my house this minute looking for my child's birth certificate, I couldn't find it. I couldn't honestly tell you what drawer it's in. So never mind people who have maybe a few children and are new to Ireland. So I think it was highly discriminatory. There's no doubt about that. It was ethnic profiling. It was people looking at this blonde child and thinking, how could a blonde child possibly be part of a Roma family? When not knowing and people not even picking up the phone and ringing Pavie Point or the Irish Traveller Movement or any other either Roma or traveller organisation in Ireland and saying, you know what, can this happen? And anybody who deals and works with Roma and travellers knows there's plenty of blonde children out there. But this is the prejudice out there that any blonde child must be kidnapped, because going back to the stereotypes, travellers and Roma steal your children. We're thieves, we're robbers, and, you know, mind your children around us. So they assumed this child was kidnapped.
Gabby.
In Romania, I come from Romania, and sometimes in our words, in Roma words, I would say to my child, just taste it, otherwise Romania are going to take you. Mm-hmm. Does Romanian or Irish people take children away? No. It's just a story, and that's it. But sometimes people watch too many movies.
And David, is it your view that racial profiling does happen by the authorities? Because Alan Shatter, I think it was in March of last year, and in October again of last year, responding to Claire Daly, said that he has been assured by the Garda Commissioner that the Garda Síochána does not engage in discriminatory ethnic profiling, and specifically that it doesn't engage in data gathering or data mining based on profiling in respect of race, colour, language, religion, nationality, national or ethnic origin.
Yeah, I think what's come out in respect of, and is obviously in terms of allegations that Pulse has recorded the details of travelling children as young as the age of 16 days.
That's one of the allegations made by one of the allegations of the whistleblowers.
And there seems to be a certain foundation to that. You know, there has certainly been evidence that's been produced in some respects. And quite recently in Cork, it was clear that a family with very young children as young as two, their children had been and were on the Pulse system.
But Alan Shatter makes the point that everyone that the Gardaí interact with is on Pulse.
I think this is a confusing type of response in some respects. I think, you know, of course Pulse operates. It's been around for a number of years, you know, and once we're still kind of trying to figure out exactly how it operates, we do know that people, you know, it's there to do in a sense assist in the police in their work, and you know that's acceptable at a level. And it's obvious that their children have been recorded on Pulse. And it's acceptable to say that, you know, if I as a parent, and examples have been given, you know, where a parent may be stopped at a police checkpoint or stopped, whatever, and if their children in the car or whatever, they may well be recorded. Obviously, children who are the victims of crime are recorded. Children who are involved in crime are recorded. So, of course, children are on Pulse. I think the really worrying concern that travellers have and what's come out in relation to these particular allegations is the fact that children, as young as you say, it's 4 to 16 days, are being separately recorded on Pulse, apart from any interaction their parents may have with the police, that the children themselves are being recorded, and the children themselves are being given what are described as intelligence numbers. Now, that's quite worrying, and that gives serious concern, because those numbers stay with those children for the rest of their life within that system. And that's the concern. And so there is serious.
And what's the outworking of that then? What end?
Well, exactly. We don't know what the end is, you know, and that's what concerns us. I think that concerns many travel families and many travellers and travel organisations. What is the end? And, you know, without knowledge of the end, without knowledge of why and a valid reason for it, you can only assume that it's connected to the ethnicity of the children and it's connected to ethnicity, an ethnic profiling regime that exists within the Gardaí. And, you know, that hasn't been disproven. So that's where the concern arises. It's not, you know, it's a bit disingenuous to say that, oh, yeah, well, all children get recorded on Pulse. Of course, as I said earlier, we know children get recorded, but in certain limited circumstances. And it's the circumstances relating to the travelling children that are showing, you know, that are raising great concerns. And like you say yourself, what is the outcome? What is the why? And we don't know the why. And when you don't know the why, the only answer we can assume is that travelling children are being ethnically profiled from a very young age within the criminal system, within the police system. And that is a major concern. And that's a clear breach of those children's rights. And I think it's a clear an affront, in some sense, to the travelling community as well.
Ronnie.
It just struck me, the quote you read out earlier from the minister in relation to the police don't collect data. I don't know whether you heard Brenda Power this afternoon trying to defend the indefensible on the
Daily
Joe
Mail
Duffy
columnist.
Show. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But she quoted a superintendent in Wexford and she gave very high statistics about travellers and crime. And my question would have been, how did that superintendent in Wexford get those statistics? Because we do not collect ethnic data in Ireland. So it's very interesting that on the one hand, the state says they haven't the systems and they can't manage to do it. They seem to always have the negative element of the work. So rather than having ethnic data so we can identify discrimination, so that we can promote equality, so that we can make sure people have access to services, we don't have any of that information or our data, but we always have it to throw back and to stereotype travellers and Roma in relation to criminal, to crime, to policing, to prison, you know. So it's really not helpful, and we'd also have concerns, you know, about the human rights of, obviously, of travelling home with children.
And Bridget, your own family has experienced this type of profiling.
Well, I would go as far to say nearly every traveller could tell you experience about profiling. And there's no doubt about that. Whether it's being pulled over by a guard for checking tax insurance, we know of several young men that are being pulled over and searched for drugs when they've absolutely no link at all to any kind of criminality, but being made feel like criminals and being made appear like criminals, and bad attitudes. So, for instance, my former background was as a youth worker. So you'd see loads of incidences of young men saying, you know, the guards approached us today and they were kind of very disrespectful to us. And you're telling us respect the guards and respect the law, but they're not respecting us. They're shouting at us and they're pushing us and they're trying to provoke us into a reaction. And that's something that we would hear an awful lot, that the guards, there is a feeling that guards do not respect travellers and assume that every traveller is a criminal until proven otherwise, rather than respecting people as an Indigenous ethnic minority, where the only kind of respect we get is as thieves and robbers and assumed to be that. And children feel that, and young people feel that, and our community feels that. And as I said, there's no traveller family out there that couldn't tell stories. When the story broke last October about the ethnic profiling, first of all, when it was brought to the Dáil by the Oireachtas, by Claire Derry, Mick Wallace and Eoghan Reardon, traveller families around Ireland didn't really pick up on it. But when the Daily Mail ran with the story, I think, a few Sundays ago, it really, really gained traction, because people could relate to this young woman that went into the guard station with two young children, and her children, the allegations are her children were placed on the PULSE system when she was looking for a passport. Now, we believe, we've seen evidence, and we believe the allegations, because we've seen the evidence and we know that this woman was, that her children were placed there with an intelligence number, as David said, under intelligence. There's all different sections. So, like, Minister Shatter gave his explanation, but I would say even if he's been genuine about it, that he's been very misinformed about it and maybe a bit removed from the reality of travellers on the ground and the experiences of travellers on the ground around being profiled and being treated differently. And
I mean,
David.
I mean, the reality, and I think Bridget has alluded to in terms of you know, I mean, PULSE has been around, I think, since about 1989. So, you know, but even pre-PULSE, shall we say, certainly the experience of many travellers, you know, would, in terms of anecdotal sort of evidence, would suggest that, you know, the Gardaí were certainly in some sense profiling travellers, you know, certainly, you know, in terms of where roadblocks were likely to be assembled, you know, were certainly close to halting sites or near traveller accommodation in some sense. And it was almost like the notion that there was sort of, they were kind of shooting a fish in a barrel as such. But I mean, I know from my previous work as well, and I've been involved for a very long number of years in community activism in the travelling community and speaking to Gardaí. I mean, I remember having a conversation a number of years ago with senior Gardaí at a seminar I was speaking at, and being told, you know, quite blatantly by the guard, well, you know, we do keep checks on the travelling community in the same way as we keep checks on say members of the IRA. Now, when my response was to, well, it's perfectly acceptable to sort of, you know, I suppose for the state to keep tabs on suspected subversives, but travelling community aren't subversive, so why was tabs being kept on them? So, you know, for me, I don't have to be told that PULSE has children's intelligence numbers. I again, like Bridget, I think the anecdotal evidence is clear that travellers in somehow have come in for special treatment by the Gardaí, and you know, there's a long history of that. And again, I mean, I think in terms of Gabby's comment earlier on in respect of the reaction of the Roma to the loss of trust in the Gardaí because of that interaction with the children, I think the same thing has existed for travellers for generations, that is a lack of trust. And I think that's unfortunate, because I think that lack of trust creates a lot of the problems that occur currently exist within our community, both in terms of how we deal with disputes and when we deal with disputes, and how travellers, you know, not being able to rely on the proper authorities to deal with disputes in a proper way. And I think that you know, whilst not excusing some of those disputes, it also explains some of them as well. So, yeah, I think there's a serious issue here. And I do think there's a serious issue in terms of serious questions to be answered. And we have to look ahead, you know, in a balanced sort of way as to what the effect has been on the traveller community. And also, I think, on the effect it has been in terms of how travellers are policed, you know. So we have to react to it, and we have to deal with it, you know.
Michael, we've a text in from Tommy in Wicklow, says, it seems like the bleeding heart Liberals have the majority in the studio tonight. Should the authorities not be given credit by acting on a tip-off from a concerned member of the public to protect a child? Here we go playing the racist card again. Better safe than sorry, in my view.
Oh dear, yeah, right. Bleeding heart Liberals, here we go. I mean, that's just the point, isn't it? As soon as you try to confront blatant discrimination, you're being categorised into a camp in order that you can be dismissed. I mean, it's just, I fail to see why it was considered to be a child protection issue in the first place. My understanding of the timeline with how this issue developed in Tala was that there was an approach to a journalist of a kind that is well known to never miss an opportunity to have a go at travellers and Roma. So this person gets an anonymous tip, later followed up, got a name, approached the guards, and the guards jumped. It's just, where else would you find it? It's just unbelievable.
I think the context, though, before the phone call to the journalist was actually, in fairness, the HSE have been trying to deal with the impact of the habitual residence condition. And one of the impacts is that many Roma don't have access to healthcare or to medical cards. So there was a special initiative supported by the HSE in the grounds of Tala Hospital, where there's a mobile bus clinic provided for Roma, and a kind of an emergency intervention, which ironically the same bus was the mobile clinic for travellers about 20 years ago. But anyway, so there was a huge, the media covered that very negatively, and there was a whole load of negative reporting in the week before this tip-off, and it was saying, why should Roma get its access to services that I'm not entitled to? So there's a whole lot of very negative racist comments and stereotyping the whole Roma community and not acknowledging the actual health needs of the Roma community, but also some of the public health needs that were being addressed through the provision of such an emergency service. Now, I might add, to us it's totally inadequate. There's a need for much more mainstream initiatives. But that's the context of the person in Tala then resenting the Roma and making the call. And I think that's where you see the kind of institutionalised racism, and that's how it manifests itself in terms of then Roma being totally victimised, and then anyone who stands up for their rights, we're all do-gooders and bleeding heart Liberals.
Gabby, what has your experience been in Ireland? Has it been a largely positive one or a negative one?
Depends, no. At the beginning, it was a negative experience because I went through a very hard time in Ireland. But no, at the end, I am okay because I'm working at the moment, and my son is working, and we are fine at the moment. But we were passing by hell before being good.
And why was that? What was happening to you?
Because I was not habitually resident, mm-hmm. and I could not had any money from. I had my son here in 2007. And 2007, I made an application for the money from the children.
Child benefits.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I just lost. For the child benefit. And I couldn't get it. Even if my child wasn't going to school, I was working. I did lots of voluntary work.
And you couldn't get it because you didn't have a permanent residence?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And even if I did so much work, I couldn't get it. And it's not only that, it's not only me, but there are lots of Roma people that they are going through hell in Ireland. And people, they just judge us. They don't. They just look how we look. And if we look bad, then we are Roma and we do lots of bad things. But they then never think how we are going through or what we are doing in Ireland. I remember when I was, because before I was working in Ireland, and because I was not habitually resident, I could not apply to any benefits. So I had to sell flowers, and I was begging as well and selling flowers, selling big issues. And people were calling me names. People were speaking bad about me. I did not understand at the time the meaning of the words because I was not speaking very good English. But sometimes I didn't bother what they are speaking about me and why they are saying that to me. I knew only one thing. My son is in Romania. He's not with me. I need to send money to my son and to my family. I didn't bother about anyone else. If I had my son here, and even when I had my son here, if I got help from the state, it was much easier for me. But it was time when I did not have money to send my child with a proper lunch to school. Mm-hmm. It was time when I did not have the uniform. My son had only one uniform. He never has second trousers. And I remember one day he was playing in the school and his trouser got wrecked. I had to buy a new one, and he had to wait for 2 days until he has to go to school because I did not have the money. My child was asking me all the time for money, you know, like pockets money, like all the teenage. Mm-hmm. So I never had the money to give him. They were giving me the money after 2 years, the child benefit. So it was hard, and it was hard for me. Because at that moment, I was already doing voluntary work for the Roma community. I knew lots of people who I have to go and speak with. Can you imagine for somebody that doesn't speak English, doesn't have any help from nowhere, how they are going through? There are families in Ireland that they are obliged to... They are obliged to beg. People doesn't think why they are begging or what they are doing that. And in Ireland, we are over 5,000 Roma. Mm. But if you are going in the street of Dublin, you are going to see maybe 50. But I don't say 50, but 50 people. Do anyone think, where are the others? Lots of, majority of the people, the Roma communities, are working in Ireland. But the thing is that everybody is hiding the identity. They don't want to say that they are Roma.
Bridget.
And that hiding of identity happens amongst travellers as well, where you have people who are doctors, solicitors, lawyers, members of the Gardaí even, priests, who hide their identity for fear of being exposed and discriminated against. Because unfortunately, experience has shown that if you're out and you're a proud traveller, people see this as something bad and negative, and people are discriminated against. So you have a great deal of people who are afraid to hide their identity. So people talk about travellers not accessing education. They talk about travellers and unemployment. There's so many travellers out there that are employed, are in self-employment, but people might never know. The nurse treating you in the hospital might be a traveller woman. Your teacher, your principal in your school might be a traveller woman or a traveller man. You don't know, because Ireland is not open to having travellers in society and accepting travellers. And we're demonised, much the same as the Roma people are demonised. And people only see the negative because that's what they look for. They never see the positive. We never have opportunities to speak about the positive aspects of our culture because we're under attack the whole time. We always have to defend our culture. So for instance, the Brenda Power article, that's one of the worst articles that I've ever seen, and the worst incitement to hatred that I've ever seen as a traveller woman in my whole life. It's a disgrace. And to think, when you heard the radio shows today and online and look online and see that, and our children have to see that, all traveller young people out there have to read that, and they're all on social media, and our elders have to read that, and to see that hate perpetrated against travellers, and to see people, civil minded people, commenting, and maybe people commenting tonight and talking about travellers and maybe never meeting a traveller, but hearing about a traveller on the media or hearing a traveller on the radio, but never taking the time to meet us and get to know us. Catching a stereotype, catching the one negative thing and latching onto it. If we were to do that about everybody, we'd never go outside the door. We'd hate everybody. We'd live our lives in fear. Because we're a minority in the country. The Roma are a minority. Travellers are a minority in the country. But the way anybody would, if you're reading the paper, reading Brenda Power, or listening to, you would think that we were ruling the country and that we were in such a stronghold. The fact is, we die younger. Our suicide rate is nearly 7 times higher than the standard population. We're marginalised. Our judges, our Gardaí, our politicians, the journalists can come out and spout racism about our people with no comeback. So we have politicians now standing in local elections preaching about how they have prevented sites from being built, travel accommodation from being built. Fine Gael politicians, 2 in the last few months that have come out strong.
Well, one of them is Fine Gael's Emer Higgins, who in Ballynakelly in South Dublin sent a letter to her constituents last week saying she was delighted to announce that the council was no longer considering developing a traveller accommodation scheme. We contacted her to take part tonight, but we couldn't reach her. Gabby, you wanted in.
I just want to say something. We live in Ireland and sometimes we can see in the media guards speaking about Roma people without knowing us. Sometimes they just say that begging is in our culture, and it's totally not. We are not cultural beggars. We are forced to beg, yes, but we are not cultural beggars.
David.
Yeah, I think some of the points have just been made in terms of Gabby and both Bridget in terms of I suppose, that notion of who we are, who travelling people, who Roma people are. And in some sense, I suppose, it's linked to, I suppose, the purpose of the International Roma Day, which I think you referred to earlier on, and as we know, happened yesterday. And I think there's some very important points we made here, because it is the prejudice, it's the stereotypes that exist that allows the type of article that was written by Brigida, Brenda Power, yesterday. It's that notion that this is what travellers are. Failing to reflect on, well, who really are these people? Who are the travellers? And like Bridget has mentioned, you know, there are people from various backgrounds, or you know, families have done the, you know, through education and through other means and methods, they've achieved certain things. And I hate to have to use that sort of thing as a barometer of achievement, that, you know, that there are traveller priests, there are traveller lawyers, there are traveller doctors, because in some sense, it's sort of saying, well, we want to be like you, and we want to be great, you know, we want to be good because that's what good people are. But it's a reality, you know, that's who. And I think Bridget touches on something very important, and Gabby has mentioned as well. It's about this hiding in plain view. Many travellers have lost stereotypes, and I've been active in the traveller community for very many years. I mean, as I said, you know, I practice law. I don't go around wearing a label that I'm a traveller or a traveller barrister, you know, but I've no difficulty with people acknowledging my background and who I am. And I think the same is for many travellers who do go into the professions or go into areas. And I don't think they should have to wear a label. However, what I would like to see happening is that they don't have to hide themselves either. And that's the problem. People who are hiding themselves, we're losing those role models. We don't have those role models in our community. So the only role models we have are the people who I would label thugs, as well as everybody else would label thugs. The people who do attack the likes of John Joe and Evan, who for me was a hero, my sporting hero, and I think a hero for the country. You know, and we're left with, you know, the community is left with kind of those sort of stereotypes that are there. And the real role models are unfortunately hiding in plain view. And I think Gabby makes the point about the Roma community in Ireland. I mean, there are 12 million Roma people in Europe, you know, and, you know, Gabby mentions 5,000 in Ireland. There's certainly in recent migrations from international Europe, there are probably that number. There have certainly been Roma families in Ireland probably for the last 150 years, you know, certainly links to English Roma and Gypsy families. And in the 1950s, Hungarian Gypsies who came here as part of some of the refugee programs that were going on as well and transferred to other countries. So there have been established individual communities, shall we say, of Roma in Ireland. And I think something that I've, you know, as a traveller, acknowledge and would always welcome. And like Gabby said, you know, we look at the Roma women on the street, perhaps to 50 or 40, and the same thing with the traveller people as well, children. And we, you know, they're multiplied into thousands, you know, they're not, there's not, you know, there is many through poverty are forced to beg. And Gabby has explained that very, very eloquently. But there are the other people who are part of the communities who are here. They were working in various types of professions, various types of jobs in various areas. I mean, you know, we talk about the International Roma Day, and for some people, International Roma Day is about protest and it's about shouting loud. I think for others, it's about celebration. And I know yesterday, I personally celebrated International Roma Day in the company of a group of brilliant Roma musicians, a brilliant man who I've met over the last year and a half, Sergio Pertianu, who is running a music school in the city centre with young Roma kids. It's open to all kids, but mainly young Roma kids, on a shoestring, with no money. You know, if this man was engaged in a cultural project in any other community, he'd be getting funding from all angles. He's running a project, and I think the fruits of that yesterday in the Unitarian Church on Stephen's Green. And for me, that was a celebration of the International Roma Day, and I think that's what International Roma and Traveller Day should be about. It should be about a celebration of culture, and it should be about a celebration of who we are. Not having to constantly protest, not having to constantly raise awareness about who we are. I'm an Irishman. I'm an Irish traveller. Irish people well know who we are. They don't have to be so ignorant of us. And hopefully through people like Gabby, through people like Sergio, that they become well aware of who the Roma people are as well. And that we can all celebrate who, which in the future will be our Irishness as well as our ethnicity as well.
Gabby.
We have Roma children in university. We have lots of children that they are going to school and they love going to school. And they want to be somebody, and when they finish the school. But, you know, also, I'm very strong on the habitual residence condition. It needs to be reviewed. It needs to be looked at the impact of that. Because this is the state pushed the people into poverty. The state pushed the children, the Roma children, into poverty.
And Ronnie, this is one area that your conference tomorrow will be looking at in detail, and the implementation of the National Roma Integration Strategy, which was urged on us, on the Irish government, by the European Commission. The Irish government put in place a strategy, I think, in February of this year. How is it doing?
Well, the European Commission developed this European Framework for Roma Integration in 2011, and it was basically in response to the rise in anti-Roma hatred throughout Europe, and we've seen murders and people being set on fire and mass evictions going on in both Central, Eastern and more recently in Western Europe to a much greater degree than heretofore. So because of the increased human rights abuses and because of the concern about trying to promote equality for Roma travellers, the European in 2011 developed this framework. Ireland submitted its plan in January 2012. The plan is totally inadequate. In the first assessment undertaken by the European Commission of the strategy, the Irish strategy, it met 4 out of 22 criteria. It has no targets, it has no funding, it has no involvement of traveller or Roma organisations and no involvement of traveller or Roma themselves. It's an absolute disgrace, and I suppose what we would say, it's a real lost opportunity for the state. This was an opportunity to actually coordinate and to drive a policy framework and to ensure that travellers and Roma had access to services. We saw it as an opportunity that the state could have reviewed existing traveller strategies, that they could have filled the gaps. So, say, for example, there has never been a national training or employment strategy for traveller. And yet, at the same time, travellers get criticised for being on the dole and for not the perception that they don't want to work. Whereas one thing I'd say about Bertie Ahern, he had a public service internship programme and it was totally oversubscribed. It was an amazing success, but then it never got mainstreamed. So travellers do want to work and have shown any time they've been given the opportunity that they'll take it up. So we saw it as a chance to review the traveller policy framework and strategies to fill the gaps and then to actually plan for the integration of the Roma community in Ireland, because the mindset of the state seems to be that if we ignore them, they'll go away. And we would be saying at this stage, look, Roma are here to stay. As Davey says, they've been here, you know, several families have been here for over the last 100 years, that you need to plan for their integration. And by that, I mean an intercultural approach, which Roma will obviously have to make some changes, but equally the state has to become intercultural and inclusive.
And you say Roma people weren't even involved in this,
absolutely
in developing
not.
This strategy.
No. And nor were we, or any of the travel organisations around this table.
Okay.
No. So the state basically cobbled together a report on existing strategies. They're still standing over that. And say, for example, the Traveller Health Strategy expired in 2005. We had a huge comprehensive All-Ireland Traveller Health Study, which gave evidence to some of the facts that Bridget spoke about in terms of the suicide rate being 7 times the national average. It showed infant and men and women's mortalities three and a half times the national average, high rates of morbidity, showed that travellers are dying for all forms of disease at all ages, you know, in much greater numbers than low life expectancy. And what has the state done? It was published in September 2010. There has been no action plan to date. And what we're getting, the National Traveller Health Advisory Committee hasn't been allowed to meet since 2012. And it's at a time when there's major reform in the health services and where we're told we're getting a mainstreaming approach that travellers will benefit the same as everybody else. We have the evidence which shows they don't. And yet we've total inaction. And what we're saying is this National Traveller Roma Integration Strategy framework provided the state the opportunity to actually harness all actors and to make sure we have a progressive strategy which meets the needs of the traveller and Roma community and the general population. It was an opportunity to create a win-win. And for me, it's shocking. At the time, I remember the time of the accession countries into the European Union, the criteria that were set for them. If Ireland had applied, say, in 2006 to join the European Union, they would have failed if that same criteria was applied to Ireland. You know, if travellers have an 84% unemployment rate, 2/3 have left school by 15 years of age, only 3% of travellers live over 65 years of age, 2/3 are under 25. It's a disgrace what's happened. And we would say it's a waste of public resources in terms of how funding it has been allocated on the backs of travellers and has never benefited travellers.
Well, I should say we did ask for someone from Fine Gael or Labour to take part tonight, but no one was available. Bridget, what does that, all of what Ronnie has said there about the strategy that's in place, but none of it is working at all, what does that say to you about the state's intentions?
Well, it says that however well-intentioned they are, that we have some great policies in place for years. We've had some of the best policies around accommodation, but we've no implementation of any of those policies. So the will is not there. A lot of the existing committees that are there, a lot of the existing structures that are there, there's no teeth in them. So, for instance, you have an accommodation, a national accommodation consultative committee that has no power to make sure that the travel accommodation plans all across the country are delivered upon. So you have something like an opportunity then, like the Traveller Roma integration strategy that's done all across the European states, that Ireland should be leading on with our track record in human rights internationally, and that we failed miserably. Some of our Roma and Traveller colleagues internationally laughed when they saw the Irish Roma integration strategy, because some of the worst countries in Europe that we would think are the worst countries had better strategies than we've had. We submitted a piece of paper that was laughable, if I'm going to be honest about it. They had, like as Ronnie said, an excellent opportunity to review, to reflect the change in climate. Like, Roma people weren't even really reflected within the strategy.
How do you explain that, Michael?
Well, it's very hard to get your head around it. I mean, I'm delighted that JB mentioned the Musicalia project. It's a guy pretty much on his own. He's got 20 to 30 kids in every week, several tutors, up to 4 tutors, doing fantastic work, great dedication from the children, coming in every single Saturday from 10 o'clock until 4:30. And really, you know, it gives a lie to the idea that Roma aren't dedicated, that they won't make a commitment. The commitment that these people have made, both the tutors and the children, is just absolutely extraordinary.
And David, how do you explain, you know, the government's apparent lack of any strategy to deal with this issue?
I mean, again, I think it's been very clearly pointed out by Ronnie and by Bridget, like, you know, and it's not something that we're unused to in Ireland over the years. I mean, we've had strategies for travellers, you know, probably since the late 1970s, you know, I mean, very first, I suppose, what's derided now at this stage, but the first intervention, shall we say, by the state for the traveller community were certainly in the early 1960s when we had an itinerancy report and we had strategies. Now, some travellers would say, well, we're glad that one failed because it was leading to assimilation and in some sense, a cultural annihilation in some respects. But you know, over the years, we've had strategies. And again, you know, I think over the last number of years, we've seen an improvement perhaps at a national level in terms of some political will. And I think the reality is at the local level. I think what you've pointed out earlier on in respect of councillors who would glorify in the fact that travellers won't be housed in their area is the real core of the problem. It's the real issue. We still have to have action at a local level because that's where people live. People live locally. We need accommodation locally. We need houses locally. We need health services locally. We need to interact locally. And when we have politicians from whatever party, and unfortunately in this particular instance it's from the governing party, when we have politicians who will turn the local elections into political ball games with the traveller community and with the Gypsy and Roma communities, that is our problem. We do not have the will at the local level.
How do you combat that, Ronnie?
Well, I think something that we've been calling for many years was the establishment of a traveller agency. We live in the real world and we know in the current political and economic context a new agency isn't going to be created. But there's a lot of senior civil servants who have responsibility in different departments like education, like health, like environment, that they should be brought together and a Traveller Roma unit should be set up because Traveller and Roma are integrated at the United Nations, at the Council of Europe, at the European Commission. So we would say in an Irish context, it's important that the Traveller and Roma issues are brought together in the same infrastructure. I would argue there hasn't been political will and we do need political champions. You know, there hasn't been enough of it. There are some notable exceptions and I think in all of what we're talking about tonight, we should acknowledge there are some really brilliant civil and public servants doing the best they can under really bad circumstances, you know, so that it isn't that there's like, a universal politician or civil servant. There's good people in all of these places. But the reality is, if you look at the outcomes in terms of travellers in particular, because we have the evidence there, is that they are not achieving the outcomes that should be achieved. And we think that there's a need for a Traveller and Roma unit to be established. We think there's a national steering committee needs to be set up to oversee this opportunity that the National Traveller Roma Integration Strategy presents. We call for an independent chair. We think we need to have real targets set, money allocated. There's an opportunity of accessing structural funds for initiatives and we're losing the opportunities. And we would say, look, we want to work with the state where we work with them all of the time. We want to work in a very positive way and a very progressive way to ensure that the human rights of both travellers and Roma in Ireland are addressed and met and that this is a unique opportunity. And what has been done to date isn't good enough. And there's a need for, as I say, high level political will. And one of the ways of trying to achieve that is that it has to be put into the performance management system of all civil and public servants, that it's part of the criteria for you to do your job, for you to get your increment, for you to advance. You have to show how you've positively actually promoted the health and welfare of travellers and Roma.
But Bridget, how do you combat the attitudes which are voiced in various newspaper articles and press releases and which may form the basis of very little progress being made in this area?
I'm of the opinion that as travellers, we live our lives, you know, and we do the best we can do. And I've often heard in terms of cultural awareness talks or anything as, you know, travellers should be more positive and travellers show the positive. We do that all the time. We live good lives. As Gabby said, we get up in the morning, we do the same things as anyone else. We strive, we look for the best for our children. We already do that. We already do promote the positive. But what is missing is that from a very high level in Ireland, travellers aren't respected or acknowledged our culture is not respected, our heritage is not respected, our ethnicity is not recognised by our state, it's denied by our state despite international pressure from all the international human rights bodies to say that travellers qualify for the criteria of an ethnic group. We still don't have that recognition. So we have our own language, our own history, our own culture. And that has been denied. We've been assimilated. We are not respected as a people. So my attitude towards how we change things is that you mightn't be able to change people's attitudes, but through different policies and through different changes in legislation, you can change people's behaviour. So, for instance, the likes of Brenda Power and the likes of the Fine Gael politicians who have been openly discriminatory against travellers, if there were sanctions against those people, if those two politicians were removed from their parties, and if a strong message was sent out, now that would change a behaviour. If the judges who called traveller men Neanderthals were asked to step down, that would change behaviour. If Brenda Power was removed from her position in the Daily Mail, that would change a behaviour because people would know that racism against travellers and Roma is unacceptable. And to me, you change behaviour first and attitudes come after. If you look at the black movement in America or the black movement in England, that's what happened. People, you don't have to love us, but you should respect our human rights. And that goes for our politicians, anybody in power. And people in society, we can deal with that. We can counter that on an everyday thing. But what we cannot counter and deal with and what we will not accept or tolerate and shouldn't have to is this kind of behaviour from people who have decision-making power, powers around decision-making in our lives. Politicians, teachers, guards, anybody in positions of power. They shouldn't be able to display these racist behaviour towards us. And I think that will create the change rather than the impetus always being on travellers to create the change. We already tried to do that. We worked. People around this table have been working for 25, 30 years on travel human rights. So we do our part.
Well, I should mention at this point that we did invite Brenda Power on the basis of her Daily Mail article yesterday to come on the programme, but she wasn't available. Ian O'Doherty wasn't asked on the programme tonight in relation to his views. But look, thank you all very much indeed. Ronnie, your conference kicks off tomorrow morning at around 9 o'clock, I think. Gabby Muntian, Ronnie Fay, Bridget Quilligan, David Joyce and Michael Keating, thank you all very much indeed for coming in to debate traveller and Roma rights with us on Late Debate tonight. We'll be back at the usual time, 10 o'clock tomorrow night. Join us then if you can. Until then, for me and from all the team, good night.